Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The latest edition of First Half Snapcast. I'm your host, Richard Butler. Joining me tonight is three-time Super Bowl winner and potentially the greatest left tackle to play the game, Steve Wallace. Steve, how are you tonight? How was Atlanta?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. It's wonderful here, just kind of enjoying myself, having a little family time and totally relaxing.
Excellent. You do have to have a great career like yourselves to enjoy your time now. College, you went to Auburn. And in the 1985 year, Auburn had a very successful year and you ended up blocking for eventual Heisman Trophy winner in Bo Jackson. How good was your guys' chemistry and did it make it easier for yourself doing your job knowing what Bo was going to do?
Well, blocking for Bo was special. I mean, if you think about a guy that's as fast as Deion Sanders and as powerful as Herschel Walker, I mean, it just, that says it all. And then it just knowing that when he's tossing the left coming my way, then the bottom line, every single time we're trying to take it to the end zone.
Yeah, definitely shows that in the stats. And to play for a great college like Auburn, was when you were able to go there, was that everything for you coming from Atlanta?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because it was a tough choice. Trying to decide if it was going to be the University of Georgia, Alabama, UCLA, and then finally picking Auburn. And it was an opportunity to go there where fans hadn't beat the University of Alabama in 9 seasons. And so they were like, if you come here, you'll help change our standards, our belief. You'll help make our people just believe that they can win again. And then that's what I went there to do. And as a 17-year-old freshman, just try to kick butt any way possible.
That's definitely amazing. The four names you mentioned there, wherever you'd gone, you would have had an amazing college career because such great teams and colleges to go to. But Auburn's definitely a different level. Like I said, the players you got to play with at Auburn were even special.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then I also have a great coach and Coach Pat Dye, his coaching staff. You know, they were hard-nosed. They were former Alabama guys that came over, and their whole mindset was, we're going to outwork Alabama. We're going to work outwork the rest of the SEC. And those were some frightening thoughts that coming in early on that you're going to have to kick a lot of butt. But that was just the mindset.
Yeah, you definitely kicked a lot of butt in there. When I was reading up about you, Steve, in your college career, you played in a game in 1983 where it showcased 25 future great NFL players.
Yes.
What was that like to play in at a time, from your personal opinion? Did you think all those are going to be great?
Yeah, it was just a tough time because every single play was the difference. When you went out there to compete against those guys, the University of Florida Gators, and like you said, 25 guys that signed a pro roster. So all of those guys out there competing, and every single play that day was a difference. Our big back, Bo Jackson, had another big day. Performed well. I think he probably had close to a couple hundred yards. And I had a heck of a day out there blocking as a sophomore. And then, you know, when you see other guys that you competed against go on to play in the professional ranks, and you know that you one day you could possibly make it there yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely when you're in that caliber, you want to carry it on, don't you, the journey. You want to make that transition. And you did make that transition in the draft with the 49ers. Now, growing up as a kid and dreaming of the NFL, was there ever a team you wanted to be drafted by?
It was without a doubt, being from Atlanta, the Atlanta Falcons. And so with that, you know, I'm sitting there watching the draft, thinking and anticipating that I would probably be late first round, early second, and then midway through the second round, there was an announcement with Mel Kiper Jr., the guru, and he was like, well, this Wallace guy failed a lot of team physicals. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, what did I do, you know? But with a knee injury, and then I had a broken bone in my wrist that never healed. So a lot of pro teams didn't want to touch a guy that had a broken bone in his wrist, but I played 3 years of college football with it. And so I was just like, it hadn't stopped me to this point. So it's not going to stop me on down the road.
No, obviously I know that maybe that was some decision what made it, obviously when you went eventually in the fourth, but you always wanted to go to Atlanta being your hometown boy, but the 49ers selected you in the 80s, yes. San Francisco were the team along with Miami and Chicago. Yes. So it must have been an absolute privilege to go to that franchise at the time.
Yes, absolutely. If you could imagine, I go into the building and I see Bill Walsh and I'm already ticked off and kind of pissed that, you know, this guy has drafted me in the fourth round where it should have been second round and second round money. And I was just kind of hot, but he came right over to me and he shook my hand and he said the magical words. He said, we're going to win a lot of championships with you on our team. And then before I could turn around, a guy by the name of Ronnie Lott came over and said, hey, I heard about you. And I'm just like, Ronnie Lott, you heard about me? This rookie guy coming in? He's like, yeah, I heard you blocked for Bo Jackson. So we really feel good about it. We heard you probably should have been drafted earlier, but we're happy to have you. And immediately at that point, I went and called my dad like, Dad, Bill Walsh and Ronnie Lott just welcomed me to the team. And so I was very excited.
Yeah, you mentioned that there about you, Bill Walsh and Ronnie Lott. Now, I've spoke to some people before and have said they've walked in and they've not been like awestruck. But a person like Ronnie Lott, it's like, really? It's like you're talking to me?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and back in those days, the funny thing about it was we didn't have the cell phone. So I had to go grab a quarter in a hurry and call him on the payphone. And it was just kind of neat to share that experience with him. And he was like in awe himself on the other side. Like, you just spoke to Ronnie Lott. Like, yes, sir, I just spoke to him. He's happy to have me here. Dad, I'm going to work hard. And then at that point, you know, everything about the fourth round just totally, you know, dissipated. Yeah. And it was all about becoming a 49er. And becoming a great player for the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, I can imagine after you've put phone down with your dad ringing around all family and telling everyone what's going on.
Yes. And then as well, you know, a lot of my college teammates, a lot of high school teammates were very excited. Like, oh my God, man, we heard Steve met Ronnie Lott already. He was welcoming him to the team, Bill Walsh. And those are just things that you could only imagine as a youngster.
I couldn't imagine. Going into that first, you had your training camp, of season comes on. What were your feelings towards that first game? How were you feeling?
I mean,
inside.
Nervous, very nervous. Like, and you kind of feel like the crowd is watching you as an individual, and all the eyes are on you. Which, you know, there are other 10, 12 other rookies out there, so it's not all the attention is focused towards you. And then I had a game that I thought was a horrible game, but on the few plays that I made some crucial and key blocks out there, John Madden, you know, had a few great things. That great announcer, the guy that has his own Genesis game, John Madden or whatever that is. And so for him to be talking about me, and then everyone at home was like, oh my God, man, John Madden was calling your name. You got the quarterback sack once, but at the same time, what an incredible day. You had a wonderful game. And then from that point, I knew it's just, you got to continue to work hard, and every single play would make a difference. And I couldn't let anybody else hit the quarterback or I would be making a trip back to Atlanta.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned there from meeting Bill Walsh on day one about that the team was going to win championship after championship. On arriving, I say San Francisco had already been very successful in the 80s. Could you see that in the establishment when you walked in, the mentality was there to win, win, win?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about it was the smallest building, probably the worst facilities in the entire NFL. We're in like a small, like oversized trailer is what I would call it. And, you know, most teams had state-of-the-art facilities. And then we're here. I was like, the 49ers won two world championships in this building? I mean, they have a half field outside, one half turf, and one half is like 60 yards turf, 60 yards grass. Like, how in the heck can you guys practice out here? But we put it together. And then in my third year with the team there, we won. The first year, it was nerve-wracking, but I started to play well and had a few games out there that I got to participate in. And then as things went along, second year started, and then Joe, you know, and his wife, Jennifer, were very appreciative. And so it was just really neat to – sorry about that. Okay. It was just really neat to see – to have them appreciate me. Joe Montana's wife come up and just show you great appreciation, which was meant a lot to me and my soon-to-be wife, Vassar.
Yeah, it must. I can imagine. She's like, Steve, love you to bits. You're protecting my husband. You're keeping him safe.
Yeah, those were her exact words. Like, man, I love you being here. You're mean. You're honorary. And you fight your butt off for Joe out there. I mean, can you say it any better? And then going home, Vassar was my fiance, and so it was like, we were discussing, like, Jennifer came up and was, like, hugging me and, like, thank you so much. And it was just a very exciting moment. And in comparison, it's like Giselle, Tom Brady's wife, coming up, giving you a hug, like, thank you so much for protecting my husband. That's exactly how it felt.
Yeah, I can't imagine the gratitude. It's just amazing. Super Bowl 23, after another fantastic year, you got to your first Super Bowl. Yes. Unfortunately, it wasn't how you wanted it to go with the early injury, but the Super Bowl, how it is nowadays, it's very media orientated and all that.
Absolutely. Then,
it was media, but it's not what it is now.
Yes. Oh, it's at a different level now. I mean, maybe back in my days, it was maybe 100 million folks watching. Now I know as well, 150, 140 million people watching, and your whole thoughts are just that I can't mess up. I can't, you know, cause any reason for the San Francisco 49ers to lose this game. And then, like you said, I'm out there and I'm running out. And I was so excited for all of my high school classmates to see me because they introduce you, Steve Wallace, in his third year out of Auburn University. And for them to announce Auburn University and you charge out on the field, I mean, still to this day, I get electricity running through my body when I think about that. But like you said, you get out there in the third play of the game, Joe gets hit, gets smacked in the face, and up through the middle, he falls back, and then his helmet hit me on the ankle, and I heard something shatter and pop like three times. I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, somebody's going to be hurt here today. But and I tried to get up, and I found out that someone was going to be me. Yes, absolutely. And it wound up being a great game. I watched the majority of the game with Ed DiBartolo. He owned the team. And so him and I were in there giving each other a high five. He was kicking me, hitting me. And I had to remind him, Mr. D, I still have a broken ankle down here. but let's find a way to win this game. And he constantly convinced me. I mean, think about the owner of the team. And he's in there telling you, Joe's done this thing a million times. He's going to do it. He's going to do it. And I'm thinking like, you know, maybe I'm the bad luck piece that I'm just the reason that it's not going to happen. And then Joe goes down the field, then eventually to John Taylor, and we win the world's championship. And I knew at that moment I had become a champion for life, and the team celebrating all of that. Yeah, we're all in tears. Because you, what hits you at that moment, and looking back, that every single person that told you you might not be good enough to make the 49ers, you block for Bo Jackson. You're a run blocking guy. You can't learn how to block for and help protect Joe Montana. And then all of the, you know, when you're at Little League, you're too big, you're too chunky, you're too chubby, and all of that. And then you just constantly worked your butt off to prove them wrong. And all in that one moment, it came down with all the tears and excitement.
Now, I can imagine. Obviously, at the end of the game, you wouldn't have been able to be doing much jumping up and down, obviously, but at least you were able to celebrate.
Absolutely. Just getting in there and to think that years before, I've seen the highlights of these teams and these organizations, like maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers and Bradshaw, see Bill Walsh and the 49ers, see the Washington Redskins, or to see other teams like the New York Giants touch and hold that trophy. And I couldn't believe it that this guy in his third year, this 23-year-old guy, Joe Montana, blindside protector, is holding on to this trophy. And it was just too much for me to digest all at one moment. So I was in a wreck with tears.
I've seen from the Super Bowls I've watched and previous ones, it means so much to the players, that first one. I know, because obviously not everyone's going to be lucky enough to win as many as some players have won, but to win one, it means everything to players just to get that one opportunity, even just to play in a Super Bowl.
You hit it on the head. I mean, Richard, I mean, exactly. Just to play in the game is so exciting. And then I was just like, God, like whatever your purpose is here today, then just let it be done. And then to see that we had an opportunity to win. And so not only just to play in that game, to have your name announced, and then now you got a chance to win this, and rings, Super Bowl rings go with that, and prestige. And like I always say, that if you play hard and win the Super Bowls, you get to enjoy those highlights for the next 100 years. And that's exactly what it felt like.
Well, getting to your 100-year highlights, you went and got rehab in the off season, back to training.
Yes.
And you came back and repeated.
Yes.
But this absolutely. Time, and you absolutely blew Denver away in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yes. And so I'll even share this unique experience. So I'm thinking to myself, like, that was a once in a lifetime opportunity, and I'll probably never get back to the Super Bowl. And then we're playing the Rams the game before the Super Bowl, and we're up 28-3. And I was just like, I can't believe this. I can't believe it. I'm going back. I finally get my chance. I'll go back. I have a chance to start and play. And so after that we beat the Rams there, and I'm on the field, I'm in a ball, a lot of mud, and I'm just kind of doing the the snow angels or mud angels, whatever you want to call them. And I'm just having a blast. And then people were constantly asking me, why are you down there? Why are you down there in the mud? I was just, you know, being as honest as I could possibly be and just saying that I never thought I would have the opportunity to go back to this game. And here I am in my fourth year going back for the second time. It's just far beyond anything I could ever imagine.
Yeah, like I said, being able to obviously play the game this time, the 49ers was so in control of the game. Was there any points halfway through thinking still too early to celebrate because football can change, or was there a little bit in your mind going, we've got this?
Well, our game plan was about John Elway. So the entire team knew that John Elway, he had a comeback victory against the Cleveland Browns. John Elway had a comeback victory against another team. Well, I think it was the Cleveland Browns twice. And so, you know, our coach, George Seifert, at that time, because Bill Walsh had retired, said, I want everybody to think about this, is that the game will never be over as long as John Elway is on the sideline. And then he had one more point, that this was the most nervous, nerve-wracking and strongest point that he made. He said the San Francisco 49ers have not beat the Denver Broncos in 11 years. And you play them like every 3 years or whatever. And so and it's just that mindset that something always happened. John Elway throws the ball into a 30 miles per hour wind, and Joe Montana throws a duck in the same wind. And just to show you the potential of John Elway to complete a pass. And so he put all these different things in the back of our mind. And we go out there and we play the Denver Broncos. And the whole time we're thinking, when the score is 10-3, 21-3, 28-3 at the half, like, everybody knows one thing, that John Elway is coming back. And we don't want to be the team that allows him to come back and have the greatest comeback victory ever in the history of the NFL. So, and then we continue to play, continue to press. And then I think they finally got another to make it like 28 or 35 to 10. And we continue to press. And next thing you know, they never really stopped us in the second half, except for a missed extra point. So the final score was 55 to 10. And with us scoring 8 touchdowns, and what a day out there. And it just, Joe Montana was masterful. Tom Rathman, Ricky Waters, Roger Craig, all of those. Oh, don't let me forget Jerry Rice. you know, that's right. You know, those guys had a great day, and our defense played extremely well as well.
No, it was definitely fantastic. It's a great one to watch over and over. When you look at Super Bowls to watch, obviously, it's a lot from my era, what I watch, but obviously I like to go back and watch, and that's one of them what I've added on my playlist, because it's such a dominant performance about not allowing a team to have that use a mobile quarterback to the best advantage. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine if it happened, that it very similar, obviously not score-wise, but something Tampa did last year that immobilised Patrick Mahomes, which takes away their best weapon. And it's very similar to what San Francisco did all the way back in Super Bowl 24. Eliminated John Elway's threat.
You're exactly right. Like, Mahomes was so dominant, and then no one could see him losing that game. Or I'll give you another comparison, like Brett Favre. So they go back to repeat, and then you get right there, you're reaching the pinnacle, and it doesn't happen. I mean, they put up a tremendous defense against the quarterback with Mahomes. And they played well the same way we did. And we just knew what an incredible threat that, you know, John Elway was. And just like last year. And then that's why you play from start to finish when you're playing against a great quarterback. Because we've seen these guys come from behind time and time again.
Yes, it does happen. So obviously this Super Bowl was obviously different as well. You had all your family there to celebrate on the pitch with you as well after the game, which must have been magical.
Oh, yes. Say that part again about the picture.
So at the end of Super Bowl 24, you had your family on the pitch to celebrate the end of the game.
Yes, yes.
That must have been magical.
Yeah, to have my parents down, to have the whole family down, cheering and jumping and going crazy. Think about this. A 24-year-old kid in 4 years has won two Super Bowls. And then now beginning to make a name for myself as the so-called blindside tackle and starting to emerge and becoming one of the dominant tackles at that position, and to have make, you know, all of that a purpose. And then my family being right there with me to totally enjoy it,
Amazing. So a couple of years passed, obviously weren't the same. They're still a fantastic team, weren't the same dominance. And in 94, you collected your second All-Pro award, and then you capped it off with ring number three. How did this Super Bowl compare to the Super Bowl 24? Because obviously a few years had come, a bit of personnel change within the team.
They're all very different, and that's very unique to say. They're, the first one was just far beyond it. It finally put me at a position where I was like, no one can tell me anything negative about myself for the rest of my life. I just believe I will outwork and overcome all things. And then the second one was like, this will never happen again. And so the third one, if you could imagine the night before the game, where everyone's in their room and probably watching some of the main networks like a ESPN or something like that. And so I'm sitting in my room and just having a casual, relaxing night, trying not to be nervous, knowing I've worked my ass off all week. And then a great announcer, a guy by the name of Phil Sims, a great quarterback, still one of the best at NBC. And, you know, Phil Sims, I give him great respect. And if he says something and he means it, and he's usually correct. And so I'm sitting there watching. It was like the NFL edge or something like that. So these guys give you the edge, a little bit more information. And I was like, okay, this is cool. Go ahead, Phil. And so Phil said, I'm going to make a prediction. And I was like, okay, you're going to make a prediction. And I'm thinking for sure that he's going to say the 49ers are going to win because we're an 18-point favorite. And so Phil said, I'm going to make a prediction and go far. You know, just this is I'm going to make a huge prediction. I'm going to predict that the 49ers are going to lose. I said the 49ers are going to lose. This guy is crazy. I mean, he's absolutely crazy. And then he said, not only that, then the reason they're going to lose is because the left tackle, I know who that is. That's Steve Wallace. That's me. So the left tackle is going to get beat like a drum all day long. And he's playing a 6-time Pro Bowler and soon one day Hall of Famer, Leslie O'Neal. And with that, Steve Wallace is going to get beat and probably will give up 2 to 3 sacks. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, like, he's talking about me. And so immediately, you know, my blood pressure just is going crazy. My teammates call. I get like 7-8 phone calls in a matter of minutes. My parents call. Oh, my God, did you see what Phil Sims said? So at that moment, I'm starting to panic and thinking, oh, my God, you know, I have so much respect for this guy. He's talking about me. I will be the reason that the 49ers will lose. And like I said before, we will watch these highlights for the next 100 years. And so I started to doubt myself. And eventually I just went in the bathroom because I just couldn't find any place really to hide. I go in the bathroom and I look in the mirror and I just stare and I shout at myself like, Phil Sims doesn't know you. He doesn't know your heart, your mental fortitude to fight every single play, to fight your heart out for the San Francisco 49ers, to make it possible for them to win the game. And so I'm just convincing myself. And I thought back at times when I was facing other great pass rushers, and I had a sense of resolve with them just because of my preparation, because I had ran 2 to 3 extra miles, because I had studied more. And I was like, at 11 o'clock that night, I said, you know what? I'm going to do something. Not only that, I'm going to work my ass off, and I'm going to make it very special. And so I go out there the next day, and I keep telling myself, it's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it, Wally. And I call myself Wally, just kind of, you know, third person. Wally, it's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it. So I'm keep convincing myself every single play, every single step, every single minute out there, I have to stay with this guy, Leslie O'Neal. I have to keep him off of Steve Young, who's our quarterback at this time, the great Hall of Famer, Steve Young. And so I'm fighting every inch. I make it to halftime, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what I said, this is going to be a special day. Leslie O'Neal has not registered a tackle. His name is, you know, outside of he played in the game, he doesn't have his name on one assist, one tackle, on anything. And so I was like, man, this would be incredible for a guy. This would be a story of a lifetime to listen to what Phil Simms said and to go out there and continue to compete. So the 49ers would build up a lead, and we're playing hard. And, you know, with the same mindset that who knows, maybe San Diego could come from behind or whatever. And so competing against Leslie O'Neal, fighting. And then at the end of the day, he had zero tackles. And I thought, oh, my God, this was incredible to listen to one of the great analysts of NBC to come out and say those type of things. And so guess what? You got to go back home and look at the video and the highlights, right?
Yeah.
So I go back home. And Chris Berman, one of the, you know, great announcers, he came on and he was like, what a day. And then he makes a lot of drama in it, and he adds all that good stuff. And then he was like, my MVP of the day was Steve Young throwing for 6 touchdowns. And I thought, wow, what an incredible day. And then one of the other guys, Tom Jackson on ESPN, goes, my Super Bowl MVP is Jerry Rice having a separated shoulder and still scored 3 touchdowns. And so I'm just kind of lounging back in my chair. And then Phil Simms goes, my MVP, I have to say it, I have to eat my words, that left tackle, Steve Wallace, Leslie O'Neal didn't get a tackle all day. So for me, it was like the greatest game. I wear that ring the most. It has the most diamonds on it. And it's just my most memorable day ever on the football field, where I competed and the guy, 0 + 0 = 0.
Yeah, and it'll stay there for hundreds of years.
That's right.
You definitely got the best pep talk ever there, didn't you? From Phil Simms.
Yes. Yeah, he got me fired up.
You're going to say, let fire just, in you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just like I said, all the way back at one of the early Super Bowls, there will never be another person to say anything negative about me and I not hold up my end of the bargain and compete my butt off. And that's exactly what I did on that day.
No, definitely. Amazing stuff. A couple more years in San Francisco before moving on to Kansas for your final season. Yes. Was there ever an opportunity to move to Atlanta to finish your career, or Was there just an option of Kansas at that final year?
Yes, I was really hoping so. But my offensive line coach, a guy by the name of Mike Solari, convinced the Kansas City Chiefs that I would be a good tackle, that I was a competitor, and I would come there and compete in the same. And then it just goes to show you, if you talk about winning, then – in that same sentence, Steve Wallace's name will be somewhere in there. I mean, for 21 years of football, from high school to Auburn University to the San Francisco 49ers, and then now I go to the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's one of their best years ever. They were 12. It's Marty Schottenheimer's best year. We were 12 and we were 13-3. We had the best record in the NFL. Elvis Gerback was our quarterback, and Rich Gannon, they kind of swapped times. And so going into the playoffs, I kind of had an average day. Elvis had been out for a while and then kind of had an average day. And John Elway and the Denver Broncos beat us in the final moments of the game and eventually went on to win a championship. And that was a tremendous experience because of how Marty Schottenheimer used a lot of the veterans. I mean, he had Steve Wallace, Kevin Ross, which was a 13, 14 year veteran, and a Hall of Famer in Marcus Allen. And he let us lead the team the whole time and let us always, we were the ones that spoke about winning, spoke about the importance of championships. And we were just literally probably on the 10-yard line and a minute away from beating John Elway, or Kansas City would have reclaimed a trophy. And then Tony Gonzalez was on that team, just to give you a name of some of the great players. Derek Thomas, Dale Carter was a defensive back. So we had a lot of great players over there and possibly could have won a championship, but we fell short.
Shame that. Got a question in regarding, so you played in San Francisco. How loud is that Arrowhead Stadium? Because I don't think TV gives it justice of how loud it is.
It is so loud. And then one thing that you don't pay attention to is that the fans are right behind you. So they're right up on you. And I can remember being there on the other side facing Derek Thomas. And one time he was outside, I was looking at him and I tried to move. And the next thing I knew, he was already behind me. And, well, you got a full season. It's only like game number 3 or 4. Joe Montana's their quarterback. So I reached out and tackled him and kept him from – well, this was one of my last years in San Francisco, and tackled him from hurting Steve Young. But that just shows you how loud that place can be, that sometimes the defender was already by you before you can even turn around and react.
Yeah, I know it's definitely a crazy atmosphere. It's one on my list of NFC ones to go over America again and visit.
Oh, yes,
there.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to go to that place because it's one of the oldest stadiums, but they keep it in immaculate, and it's just a beautiful place.
Yeah, it definitely is. We touched on early on in the interview, John Madden. He spoke about you a lot, but he's also called you a few mean words as well for describing your player. Nasty, tenacious, mean. People think it's not a great compliment, but it is, isn't it? It's a great, because it's talking how you play.
Yeah, you know, John Madden, it just, there wouldn't be a left tackle, a blindside tackle without John Madden and his description. Like you said, those are some of the worst words you could call a person. But from the position I played, Joe Montana had great appreciation for it. Steve Young had great appreciation for it. You just, at that left tackle position, you got to be mean, nasty, tenacious, grimy, a little drips of blood here and there. You got to get some mud on your face. And, you know, you just have to have a whole nother mindset. And John Madden, from the first day that he met me, he said that I played with a defensive mindset, that I was mad and pissed off that I couldn't rest the quarterbacks. And so that was the reason that I played so hard and so intense. And like you said, John Madden, just being a tremendous person, he made, like I said, that blindside spot, all of those big linemen over there for the Dallas Cowboys, he made those guys too, Nate Newton, big Eric Williams, and the rest of them, Larry Allen. John Madden put us all on the map. So he put us all on the map.
I definitely did. In regards to how you played there, it definitely works. Like you mentioned in the Super Bowl against the Chargers, but also I think you're one of the only people who really has ever stopped Lawrence Taylor in his tracks from even having one of his kind of games. You have eliminated him from whenever you played the Giants. It was non-existent with LT.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's what everybody says. The numbers kind of speak for themselves, but Lawrence Taylor, I guess I had so much respect for him because I had a Uncle George Wallace was a comedian and he cracked a lot of jokes. And then once Lawrence Taylor said he was performing and Lawrence went out to watch him and he was like, well, my nephew's going to kick your butt. And I told him if he ever said anything else like that, that there would be a family feud and a true fight at home. And don't you ever, ever say anything bad about Lawrence Taylor again. That's Mr. Lawrence Taylor. And that guy was, he was so fast, so quick. But it's just certain people you match up well against. And
brings the best out of them.
Yes. And I could have the toughest time against him on the field. And I just knew that he was so great that there was one or two plays throughout the game that I wouldn't do well on him. And Steve Young or Joe Montana better dodge him or get away or do something to keep my confidence up. And then that I usually had at least that one time every time I played him where he tried to run over me, run around me, or do something. And I had just enough my hands. I got big hands, and I could push him to the side just enough so that Steve Young or Joe would run around him and run down the field about 20, 30 yards. And so he knew he couldn't make that same move again because he just caused his team so many yards. But that guy was fierce and tense. And I just say, thank you, Mr. Taylor, because you never said anything to me in a negative way. Because well, a lot of times as a kid, when I watched him on film, he was like, let's go out here like some crazy dogs and get after their butts. And like, man, you can't stop me today. And so playing against him, I just like, you're going to keep your mouth closed. You're going to shut up. You're not going to say anything. And if he gets by you and doesn't hit the quarterback, you're going to say, good move, Mr. Lawrence. You know, good move. Just to kind of make him not try so hard. Yeah. And so that was the whole thing is that as long as I was in his mind somewhat, and never going to fight that dude because you don't wait, you know, let sleeping dogs lie. And I was never, ever going to wake him up on the field. I just wanted to shake his hand at the end of the day, and he had no tackles. And so, you know what? My mindset was, I felt like if I played against him in basketball, he would never beat me. And so that's kind of, I was like Charles Barkley, but playing football. And so he wouldn't beat me in basketball. So then I could dance with him all day.
Yeah, definitely. I can imagine a few of the younger players nowadays. I think if they said something to LT, I think LT might be having a few words.
Yeah, oh, I mean, because his words can be intimidating. If he says something and beat you, I mean, you just could go into a zone that you know it would just be hard to battle back from. Because we all seen him play. We all watched him play. We all watched how he played reckless abandon. And he just played fierce and intense and all of that. And then he was a tremendous athlete on top of it.
Yeah, it definitely was. During your career, Steve, you suffered many concussions and as there's obviously a lot of trouble in the late 80s, 90s with NFL protocols, and it's changing as the game evolves now. How do you feel the concussion protocol is now to how it was? Is it how it is now, is that what you guys were championing for back then?
Oh, yes. You know, I think, and I'm going to give the NFL a tremendous thumbs up on everything they've done as far as this is a guy that probably had the most concussions that, you know, I had to eventually wear that little hat, yeah. Helmet. But with the commissioner and Roger Goodell, they've done a tremendous job. They made the game so that the moms, the soccer moms or the football moms can trust the game again. They've taken away or tried to take away the long kickoffs where guys are running 50 yards and then running full speed into each other. They're trying to shorten that distance so that – and then they're teaching the game where you don't lead with your head or the helmet, yeah. That you play and you do most of your tackles through your shoulders – and driving through the hip movements, but you're not, you know, leading with the top of your head or the crown of your helmet on your tackles. And that'll save a lot of injuries. That'll save for arthritis on down the road after the NFL and all of that. And so the NFL has done a tremendous job to make this game a better game. And I will say this, is that a lot of players – didn't like the changes at first, but we do understand that those changes are to protect the players.
It definitely is, because it's already a short career, isn't it? Already 3 to 5 years, so there's some uncertain positions, so yes. Anything what can help is definitely a plus.
Yes, absolutely.
We've sort of touched on the left tackle blindside position and how you made that your role, and it's sort of comments from John Madden and the inspiration from him, which was how you made that position your own and how it's still talked about today, isn't it? Would you say?
I would just say yes. And thank you for mentioning that, because looking back and looking at the, just like for me, for instance, I knew I was going to be a free agent. John Madden and all of those folks were like talking about the importance, how Joe Montana felt a level of comfort. And I'm just saying, you're blindsided. So everything behind you, you know, for a guy to, he can throw the ball down the field and look at, look for Jerry Rice another few seconds. And there, when we went for some big plays now, thank you, Joe, because Joe did say, he called me Big Sexy, and he would say, Big Sexy, I need a little more time on this one, baby. You have to stay with him. So I need a little more time on this one. And it just made a tremendous, it meant that I had to work my feet longer and to stay after the guy. And there was no way I was going to let him get in there. And then eventually to think that I was going to be a free agent. And so I was totally excited about that. And 49 was like, yeah, right. You're going to be a free agent. And I was like, I will see. And then one day they came and spoke to me, and they had a check for me, and they said, this is what your check will be. And I looked, I mean, because for most part, Lyman had made like barely making $1 million to having an offensive left tackle. There are five guys that play that lineman spot, but for you to pay one guy basically $2 million, and I was the first $2 million lineman or eight-digit salary for a lineman in the NFL, and it just like blew the walls down. It absolutely, and then now you see some of these linemen sign $100 million contract. Well, I wish I had a small piece of that, but
at the same,
yes, absolutely. But at the same time, to be the first guy that, you know, signed the contract that made the difference as the so-called blindside tackle, it just it was just a huge part of history. You know, even with Michael Orr being called the blindside tackle, he never really made it as a blindside tackle. So you have to have you have to be a guy that protects that quarterback well on that side, a guy that gets after it, and a guy that has to be a little nasty and tenacious, like John Madden said.
Definitely. It was amazing. Got a couple of questions from a 49ers fan who was hoping to join the show tonight, but he's been unable to join.
Okay. What,
you've already mentioned a bit. What was it like to protect the blind side for Montana and Young?
Okay. I tell you, it's just early on, I had my own mindset of what I needed to do. And then it's kind of one of the greatest stories in the NFL is that facing one of the fierce pass rushers and a guy by the name of Chris Dolman, Hall of Famer, six-time Pro Bowler. And then he had kicked the 49ers' butt the year before and sacking Joe Montana twice. And Joe Montana was constantly looking over his shoulder the whole game. He couldn't relax and play. And then the 49ers, Bill Walsh, put in Steve Young to give us a chance to try to win the game. And I remember thinking in the back of my mind that if Chris Dolman gets close to Joe Montana, I got to fight him. I got to do something to get his mind off of hitting Joe Montana. Your mind could be on messing with Steve Wallace and dealing with all my different antics. So my antics were early on as a youngster that I was stirred up a little bit. I may accidentally touch their face mask with a hard punch or a hard blow. And with that, it would make them totally focus on me. It would be personal. And so I can remember on one play where Chris Dolman had ran me up the field. He was so mad at me that he literally ran past Joe Montana and thought about, oh yeah, by the way, I'm chasing Joe Montana. I'm supposed to get the quarterback, but his mind was on getting after me. And that was okay. That was perfectly fine. And he knew it totally took him out of his game. So during the regular season, we went against each other. We fought each other. We literally had a fight out there, and I was like, it worked out exactly like I wanted it to. He hit Joe Montana one time, and that was the only tackle he had the whole day. And so in a part of the blind side, Bill Walsh showed, like, Steve, if you can, the whole team a video, if our left tackle could find a way to compete against this guy. And you're talking about nerve-wracking for him to call you out in front of the whole team and say, if he could do that, then we can win this game. And I'm thinking like, dang, Bill, you going to put the whole thing on me? If I can fight or defend Chris Dolman off of Joe Montana, then we got a chance to win the game. And they kicked our butt last year. And so that's I went out there, and Dolman made a statement before. He said, only thing Steve Wallace does, he try to fight you to get your mind off of hitting Joe Montana. I thought, oh, my God, he figured me out. And then that week of the game, I just told myself, I don't care what he does. I'm not going to fight him. I'm not going to do all those crazy antics that I do to keep your mind off of Joe Montana. I will find out today if I am a good left tackle or potentially a great left tackle. And that day I found out Chris Dolman had one assist and didn't lay a finger on Joe Montana. And so we blew him out. We absolutely blew him out. And then that was the start of the Super Bowl.
That's amazing. You put a lot, Servi, 1988 to 1994 Niners team was one of the greatest teams of all time in that year, them few years. What was it like to play for such a formidable team, but also that the teams never dropped the level, but never dropped the game?
You know, it's a tremendous tip of your hat to all of our teammates, because for maybe 16 years, I think we won at least 10 games. And if you can imagine, if you're 4-6, it doesn't look like you're going to make the playoffs, and we win the next six games just because of the pride of the San Francisco 49ers. What we've been taught, that if this guy gets hurt, I think that year Steve Young got hurt, Elvis Gerback got hurt, all the quarterbacks get hurt, and we're winning a lot of games with our third-string quarterback. And so it just was a tremendous tip of our cap to show that there was so much pride in that 49er locker room. And it started all the way back with Ronnie Lott, with Joe Montana, with Jerry Rice, and all of those guys, and the guys that helped win the first championship, Carlton Williamson, Dwight Hicks, and those guys laid down the foundation, and we just continued to win and gave it our all. Then the next generation come in with myself, Steve Wallace, Tom Rathman, John Taylor, Tim McHire, Don Griffin, and we played a huge part in making the next three Super Bowl rings. And we used to call ourselves back then Pepsi. We were part of the new generation. And then, you know, that was probably the slogan back then, but it was all good. Whatever it took to make us better.
Excellent. Of the current 49ers team nowadays, if you could pick one player, who do you think Bill Walsh would have enjoyed to coach and why?
I'm going to say this because they couldn't be good friends. God, that's a hard one. One player who Bill Walsh. I need to say Joe Montana, just that Joe could think about how positive this is. Joe Montana could never really win the pass and efficiency contest. And that means that you got to complete so many passes, because Joe Montana played the game like Bill Walsh wanted him to. So if you got third down or second and eight, Joe Montana would throw the ball away. And that's an incompleted pass. Where nowadays guys take a sack. Let's say like you take three sacks during the course of a game, and you know, maybe you may run out of bounds or something, and you saved yourself from throwing an incomplete pass five times during the course of a game. So you were 20 for 25. But the way Joe Montana played it, you might have been 22 for you were 20 for 25, but Joe played it where he might have ended up being 18 for 25 because he got rid of the ball and he kept his team in a great position. So opposed to it being third and 15, you just took a sack. Now Joe is facing third and eight, is much better percentage of getting the first down. And so that's Joe played like similar to how Tom Brady is playing now. He plays winning football. And if you play winning football, there's a good chance as a true champion as Joe Montana and Tom Brady, you're going to win a lot of games.
Definitely. Just before we finish, Steve, it'd be good to get your thoughts on the San Francisco 49ers going into this season. And obviously, 2 years ago, they made the Super Bowl. We're going really well from against Kansas City, and Kansas came back. They had a lot of injuries last year, which really affected Kyle Shanahan's team. Obviously,
yes.
They're all healthy, it seems, coming into the new season. Some good additions. Are we hoping that they're going to be challenging again for the playoffs and Super Bowl?
Absolutely. I think this is what makes this so interesting, is that the 49ers had a very subpar season last year, but you look back, they had six guys missing in their starting unit. At one point, probably 10, and they still competed. So with that, now you're going to have all these guys back healthy. If you can figure out the quarterback situation early on, and I guarantee you, if Shanahan had known that Aaron Rodgers wanted to play for a different team in February, then you just trade up maybe two first-round draft picks, and you get Aaron Rodgers. Because for one thing that I noticed, because the 49ers had a chance to get Tom Brady last year, and the Patriots were saying, okay, trade Jimmy Garoppolo back. But the 49ers were like, no, we're just doing this for the future. It's all about winning the Super Bowl right now, because tomorrow it might not be there. The makeup of the team, free agency, a lot of different things can happen. And so with that, it's so important that you give yourself an opportunity to win the Super Bowl right now. And then so with Trey Lance right now with the 49ers, I just see us being a much better team. Or if it's Garoppolo, I mean, he's taken a team to the Super Bowl before. If he takes us to another Super Bowl, I just don't want to see it be against Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, for sure. It's been an absolute pleasure, Steve, to have you on the show tonight to speak to an absolute great of the game. And it's been a brilliant
occasion
for myself and for the guys here on the show.
Okay. Thank you, Richard. I enjoyed it. Hope all is going well in the UK. And go 49ers, and you guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. You too. Enjoy time with your family.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.